Someone who is depressed. How can I help? That question is raised often. We learned last night from Brian the facts and statistics on how many are depressed in our society. It's not surprising, therefore, that frequently we know of someone who is suffering a severe depression. Maybe someone very close. It could be a spouse or a family member or a close friend. It might be someone a little further distant from us in our church or at our place of work. We want to help, but because we don't really understand what depression is all about, we don't know what to do. The purpose of this final speech is to give guidelines for helping. What I have to say is based not so much on what I've read. I can read, and I do read, and I've read some on this, but based mostly on my experience, having gone through depression myself, and then as a pastor being put into place to help others with depression. The help that we're able to provide for someone who is depressed is in part determined by our relationship to that person. If the depressed person is not close to us, a family member or a close friend, but, say, someone in the congregation, our ability to help is somewhat limited. You know, generally a depressed person is not about to open up to others and to talk about his depression. He will pull back from people. That's true even from his family members and his close friends. And so he's not about to open up to you who sits across the other side of the church from you on the Lord's Day. Nevertheless, you are able, and everyone is able in the congregation, to provide some real help to other members in the congregation, or in our churches, or in the community. A depressed person has, as one of his greatest fears, the thought that when people know what's happening to me, they're going to reject me totally, and I'm going to be left all alone. For people that they know, and sometimes even people they don't know, to send a card with a note saying, "We care, we're praying for you, we hope you get better soon, and get back with your life," is a tremendous boost to someone suffering depression. That was my own experience in Edgerton, Minnesota. I guess I was sort of in a visible place in the ministry, but people from the denomination, my own congregation, and even from the community, people I didn't know, reached out that way, and you cannot imagine, unless you're in the situation, how helpful that is. These people aren't rejecting me. They do care. When you see someone depressed, functioning, and perhaps passing them along, whether outside of church or anywhere, give them a word of encouragement. Don't ask them, "How are you feeling?" Very, very likely that they are feeling rotten today, and they're just going to pass it off and then feel guilty for not really being honest. Just give a word of encouragement. "Glad to see you. Hope you're doing well." You'd be surprised how that may lift someone. Don't just stop in on someone and pay a visit. The likelihood is very great that they're having a very hard day, and your visit, even though well-intentioned, is going to be a drain on them. But words of encouragement, cards and letters, of encouragement are very helpful. Don't underestimate that. And of course, don't underestimate your own prayers for the recovery of that person. When you're closer to a depressed person, you're in a position to provide more help. And that's what the rest of the speech is going to be about this morning. How can one to whom you're close, how can you help a close friend or family member that is depressed? And the first thing you have to do is learn as much as possible about depression. I've seen two extremes in those who want to help. I've seen the one extreme, people think they have all the answers about depression. They've never experienced themselves. They've never been close to one. But they've got it all figured out, and well-intentioned, they reach in and they're going to help. And they rush in where angels even fear to tread. And in my own experience, there are people who reached out to help me, didn't understand what they were doing. I loved them for it, but they provided no help, and in some cases, their advice was exactly wrong. The other extreme is this. People want to help, and they see depression in a loved one, and they're mystified, and they don't know what to do. How are we going to respond to this? How can we help? The first thing is educate yourself by reading or talking to others who have gone through depression. There's a great deal of information on the internet. There's also a lot of books available that explain the ins and outs of depression and how to help people with depression. Professor Decker mentioned Minrith and Meyer. They've put out a great deal of material. One of their more original books, Happiness is a Choice, is one that I've found very, very helpful to educate someone with very little background in depression. I probably bought a dozen copies and I loaned them out and I don't have any left. Minrith and Meyer, Happiness is a Choice. Anxiety. This conference is about depression, but as Brian said last night, anxiety and depression are brother and sister. Where there one is, you're going to find the other. One book very helpful to me was the Anxiety and Phobia Workbook by Edmund J. Bourne, B-O-U-R-N-E. Tremendous amount of information about anxiety. And if you ever get that book, look at the section Negative Self-Talk. What a helpful section. So first of all, learn as much as you can about depression. Secondly, urge the depressed person to get more help than you are able to provide. There's a saying, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. And that's true here too. So you have a little knowledge of what depression is. Don't think that you know all about depression and that you have all the answers and that you're going to take care of the situation all by yourself. I had a little knowledge. I still only have a little knowledge. I had less knowledge once and I thought I had a whole lot more. When I was first in the ministry, I was asked to give a speech to the Northwest Iowa Ladies Society about depression. Oh boy, am I embarrassed. I hope that no copies of that speech are around. I threw my copy of it away. As I gain more and more experience in dealing with depression, I'm more inclined to have people get help more than I can provide. The depressed person often needs help from a competent counselor. And right away we think of a psychologist or a psychiatrist. And those are often very important sources of help that a depressed person needs. Don't discount, however, other people in the church who have gone through depression and know what it's about. They can be a tremendous resource and help to the depressed person. Also, the pastor should get involved. And here in our denomination, we have some pastors who, because of their experience, know a great deal more about depression than others. But there is, as was pointed out this morning, a significant spiritual dimension to depression, and the pastor should be included in those who help the depressed person. A psychiatrist is a medical doctor, but if there is no psychiatrist available, a depressed person ought to see a medical doctor, because there are physical sides to depression. And I personally am one who encourages folks to go to the medical profession and get on an antidepressant. In that connection, don't just tell the depressed person, go here, do that, go see a counselor, go to your pastor. A depressed person is often reluctant. Depression takes away all initiative. Depression makes you fearful to reach out. Often you have to make the arrangements yourself and go with them, even to the point, with their permission, of course. You don't want to do things without their permission, because then you've broken their trust. Even to the point of finding out what their insurance will pay for. The third thing I have here is, be there for the depressed person to provide him with emotional, physical, and spiritual help. Let's talk about emotional help. One who is depressed is emotionally out of control. I have four things here. First of all, give words of hope that the depressed person will, with God's help and the help of others, overcome his depression. Perhaps the worst thing that a depressed person feels is the sense of hopelessness. He's tried everything that he knows to stay on top, and everything is broken in his life at this point. He can't function. He can't think. His whole life has slipped through his hands like water, and he's without hope. With the Word of God and with comforting words of Scripture, he needs words of hope. There is a way out. There is no temptation such as is common to man. And God will, with the temptation and trial, provide a way to escape. That has to be reinforced. The second thing is, assure him of your love and how valuable he is to you and to the Lord. Professor Decker correctly pointed out that a depressed person suffers from low self-esteem. He thinks very little of himself, and he assumes everybody else does too. He even hates himself, and he thinks everybody else does too, even the Lord. You have to assure him, I love you. I think a great deal of you. I don't share in your opinion of yourself. Others don't either. And now we're dealing, of course, assuming with a Christian, a believer, and the Lord values you as well. That has to be reinforced again and again. Thirdly, encourage the depressed person to express what he is experiencing. There's good therapy for a depressed person simply to get it off his chest. The inclination of some is to hold it all in. That's self-destructive. Get the depressed person, if possible, to open up. If he doesn't want to talk about it, get him to write and to journal. But it's healthy for him to express himself. And if he does express himself to you, don't be shocked by what you hear. Usually when he opens up, he's going to be at his worst, when he's in his blackest mood, and you're going to be inclined to think that this person isn't making any progress. Well, that's not true. You're going to hear him at his worst. Then, fourthly, help the depressed person deal with his fears. A depressed person is insecure and is often filled with unbelievable fear. There's a word I've used, and I found myself doing it without realizing it. It's called catastrophizing. You imagine everything that's going to go wrong, and you imagine a catastrophe here, and a catastrophe is going to be there. There's going to be one tomorrow, and there's going to be one next year. And it's completely unrealistic thinking. It's that kind of thinking that often brings on depression. But when depression sets in, that's magnified. And it's very helpful with your perspective. A depressed person's judgment simply is not correct anymore. He doesn't see things the way they really are. If you can sit down with a depressed person and show him, not argue with him, but show him and reaffirm, look, catastrophe is not looming. 90% of the things we worry about don't even materialize. In that connection, you have to encourage him to bring his problems to the Lord and his worries and his fears and to leave them there. There's a deep spiritual dimension there. And help him find solutions to some of his problems. You know, when a person is down in the depths of depression, his whole life has fallen apart. There are things that he was supposed to be doing, and he's not getting them done, and it's just building up and up and up, and he needs help to say, okay, now look, we can't do this. Let's leave this for tomorrow. Let's handle this. And he needs to be guided through so that he can at least have room today to breathe and the pressure of all these problems and fears are relieved. That's emotional help. Physical support. Help him handle the responsibility he's not able to manage. The message has correctly been set forth here. A depressed person is one who, because of various factors, is no longer able to function. He can't concentrate. He can't think. He can't focus. He's exhausted. He can't do the things that he ordinarily has done. The rule of thumb is a depressed person should do as much as he or she can. But when depression is severe, much of what is expected of the person, he can't do. I can't work full time. I just can't do it. I can't get up and clean the house today. I can't meet this responsibility. The rule of thumb is, for a person to recover, they have to be relieved of some of these responsibilities until they can emotionally and physically and mentally come back some. And they need help. Help with the kids. Help with the housework. Help with other things. And then don't be resentful if, while you're helping them, they're off, say, going to the mall. They need that. To get away from the things that are pressuring them, but they need help. Provide that. Encourage them also to eat healthy and to exercise. I'm not exactly sure how to put this. We were told last night that medical studies show that eating and exercise don't really determine or influence the serotonin level. Okay, I think I understand that correctly, but nevertheless, the worst thing a depressed person can do is eat junk food and sit around and do nothing. That's what they feel like doing. Part of a recovery is to eat well and to get out and to exercise. And when you're depressed, you lack the initiative to do those things. You really want to help somebody, do it with them, encourage them. Let's go exercise. Let's do this. Let's do that. In fact, because they can't take any initiative on their own or it's very difficult, it's often helpful to them if you've got a project and you say, look, I need some help. Would you come here and help me today? And don't expect a whole lot, but they're there and they're working. One of the best things my father did for me in 1979 when I was over here on leave, Professor Decker and Inglesmo and Hankel were working with me. I met with them almost daily. My dad was a builder and I had learned a few of the skills, and he says, why don't you come to work for me? I didn't get much done. I got paid well. I didn't get much done, but I was busy, and it was a tremendous help. Spiritual support. A depressed person is spiritually exhausted. He is at an emotional, a physical, and a spiritual low point in his life. And he needs to be led to the Lord. The point is, don't just send him to the Lord. You have to lead him and go with him. A depressed person can't focus. His attention span is very short. Professor Decker said it this way. He got to the point where all he could say was, Lord, help me. I was there too. That's all I could do. What a tremendous help for someone to lead you in prayer and bring you in prayer to the throne of God's grace. What a tremendous help for someone to sit down and bring you the scriptures in a very simple way. And again, remember, the depressed person's ability to concentrate is diminished. Don't preach a long sermon. Don't have a long prayer. Don't have a long scripture. But lead him to the Lord. Now, many of us are faced with this. We have a loved one that's depressed. They need help, but they won't get it. What are you going to do? From one who was in that situation of the one being depressed, I can tell you the dynamics. When someone is deeply depressed, it's very easy for him to simply sit tight and do nothing. In a certain sense, some people are afraid to admit that they are depressed because of the social stigma attached to it. I was that way. My life was falling apart in Edgerton. I couldn't do anything, and I didn't recognize what was happening, and I didn't want to hear I was depressed because that meant certain things, I thought. And even when I went to the medical doctor, and he says, you're depressed, I had a hard time accepting it because of the social stigma. Besides that, if you are going to reach out for help, you're going to have to tell people all the dirty laundry in your life. You think so little of yourself, you consider yourself to be a complete failure, and that's hard to open up and tell other people. And you're going to fear their rejection. I remember when I was going down at the beginning of the summer, I took my 3 weeks vacation, came out here, and I was going to talk to Professor Decker. I don't know if he knows that yet. I was going to talk to him. And I didn't dare. I spent the whole vacation here doing other things and didn't dare open up to him. Not because he's someone that you can't open up to, but I was afraid. I was afraid to open up. That's the dynamics that keeps a depressed person from getting help, so that often by the time he does reach out for help, he's desperate and it's gone way further than it needed to or should have gone. I'm an example. So, you're in that situation. You want a loved one to get help. What can you do? First of all, carefully, tactfully point out to him the obvious symptoms of depression that are crippling him. Don't argue. Don't get angry. But constantly point out to him, you know, you're not able to do this now. You're pulling back. You're not eating. You're very irritable with the children. Not judgmentally, but point out what's happening. Then give him assurances that you love him and accept him. You know, part of the reason he doesn't want to reach out because he's afraid if he lets other people know what's happening, they're going to reject him. Well, you make sure that he knows we don't reject you here. We love you. We care for you. And give him assurance there is real help. There is real help because he feels it's not going to do any good anyway. There's no help. Sometimes what I've found helpful, if someone won't go to a minister or to a counselor, suggest, why don't you go to a doctor, a medical doctor? You've got these physical problems. You can't sleep. Your stomach is upset all the time. Why don't you go to the medical doctor? Often a medical doctor can point out to a person effectively, look, you've got depression. You need to do something more. And then finally I have here, don't enable the person to continue in depression, but enable him to get better. You know, they say that with an alcoholic, don't enable an alcoholic to continue his drinking. Don't cover for him. Don't make excuses for him. That enables him to continue his drinking. Sometimes you simply have to hold back and step back and let him fall completely on his nose before he'll get help. Sometimes you have to do that with a depressed person too. They're able to function at a minimal level or a certain level, but things are not going well. The home is miserable. Don't cover for him or her. Sometimes you have to draw your boundaries and say, this is how much I can help, and the rest I'm going to let go, and my loved one or my friend has to hit the bottom. And then I'll be there to enable them when they're ready to get help to walk out of this mess. What if the depressed person shows signs of suicide? Professor Decker spoke of that. That is a real concern. Some who are severely depressed do attempt suicide, and some successfully. When you're dealing with someone close to you who is severely depressed, learn the warning signs that one is seriously contemplating suicide. I got this off the internet earlier this week. Here are some signs. He talks about wanting to die or wishing it was all over. Most people who try to kill themselves first talk about wanting to die and not wanting to live. Secondly, a person begins stockpiling medications, or he buys guns or gets them out of the safety locker, or does anything to make a suicide attempt easy. There you have a big risk of a suicide. Three, begins giving away possessions. Four, writes notes to try to tie things up. Even if he's not explicitly talking about a potential attempt of suicide. And finally, begins abusing drugs or alcohol or eats dramatically less. Those are all danger signs that someone is at risk of suicide. If you have a genuine concern that a depressed person in your life is a risk, call the suicide hotline. That's a terrible thing, to be in a position where you're afraid someone's going to commit suicide and you don't know what to do. In every phone book, there is a hotline for suicide intervention. Call them. You'll get a tremendous amount of help. And if you feel that someone you know is on the verge of committing suicide imminently, call the police. Call the police. As Professor Decker said, you don't want to live with the fact that someone you're trying to help committed suicide and You saw it coming and were paralyzed, didn't know what to do, and did nothing. Finally, some don'ts. Don't tell the depressed person, snap out of it. He can't. We're talking about an inability to function, an inability to focus and to do one's normal work. He can't snap out of it. To tell him that is simply going to discourage him further. Don't assume that the depressed person is lazy just because he's not fulfilling his normal responsibilities. Again, depression is not the same as laziness. It's an inability to function. Yes, a depressed person has a hard time getting up out of bed, spends often much time in bed, sits on the couch, is inclined not even to get dressed during the day. Don't just assume that's laziness. Depression is an inability to do the things that one normally does. Don't view the depressed person as someone that has a horrible sin problem that's bringing on this depression. Professor Decker addressed that quite effectively. I agree with what he said. Sin is a factor in everything we do, and there are certain sins that certainly are factors in our depression. One who has major depression almost always has an unbiblical view of himself, a low estimation of himself, which is not biblical. Yes, that's sin. A depressed person often has unrealistic standards for himself that don't reflect what God requires of him. He expects more. That's not right. That's sin. A depressed person, especially as he goes downhill, is not trusting in God. That's sin. And yes, there are sins that sometimes a depressed person struggles with. One of them is anger against God. God, why are you letting this happen to me? I can identify all those sins in my own depression. But I don't consider myself or any other depressed person a greater sinner than anybody else sitting here in this room. We all struggle with sins. As Professor Decker said, yes, sometimes a sinful lifestyle can bring on depression. I remember very distinctly a case where a man was brought to major depression because of an affair he was having with another woman. It has to be dealt with accordingly. But don't simply assume this person has some dirty, dirty secret that he's hiding, and that's why he's got this depression. This person is spiritually weak. It's not realistic. And to have that attitude and to promote that simply makes it difficult for depressed people to deal effectively with the problem. Next, don't be too quick to interfere and contradict the counselor. There's one thing I've learned, and I had to learn it the hard way with my own depression. Don't be your own doctor. You got to trust somebody. Don't be your own doctor. When you're depressed, your judgment is off, your grasp at straws. Don't be your own doctor. Well, the same advice goes to one of us who is trying to help the depressed person. He's seeing a competent counselor. He's seeing a competent psychologist or psychiatrist. Don't be a Monday morning quarterback, second guessing. If there's getting no relief and the counselor is not helping, consider with that person another counselor, but don't try to second guess what they're doing. Fifthly, don't be overly judgmental. Under that I have, don't be quick to criticize the depressed person when he's not performing the way you expect him and the way he did before. Is it possible that a depressed person can take advantage of the situation and do less than what he could potentially do? It's possible. But give the benefit of the doubt. Most often, when a person is not performing and is not doing what you expect him, it's because he is not able at this point to do. And yes, when the true, genuine faults of a depressed person are obvious to you, follow the instruction of Galatians 6, 1 and 2. Brethren, if a man be overtaken with a fault, ye which are spiritual, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness. Considering thyself, lest thou also be tempted, bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. Three more things here. Don'ts. Don't reinforce the negativism of the depressed person. A depressed person is very negative. He sees life through dark glasses. Everything is gloom and doom. He wants you to share in that perspective too. Don't. Don't argue with him. Don't contend with him. But treat him with your positive perspective. And say, well, you know, I see it this way. And reinforce a positive perspective. Next, don't take personally his being distant from you. Sometimes people reach out to help a person who is depressed, one that they love, a family member, a classmate, someone who is a close friend, and they find that person pulls back. It's very easy to become offended. Don't. It's not about you. It's about this depression and what this depression is doing to this person. Don't just leave. Don't just walk away. Wait around. And be there when he's willing to talk to you. And finally, don't let his depression consume you. You can have someone whom you love very much and very important to you whose life is falling apart. And it's very easy to say, I'm going to fix this. And pretty soon that becomes your whole life focused on making sure my loved one is better. You don't have it within your power to overcome someone else's depression. Only that person who makes certain choices with the help of God can overcome his depression. You can be there to assist him and help him, but you can't do it for him. Your life has to be bigger and broader than the life of this depressed person. Draw your boundaries. How can I help? I'm not going to allow myself to be pulled down in depression with this person. My life is bigger and broader than the depression of my loved one. Don't let his depression consume you. I suppose it's not a very good way to end a speech with all these don'ts, but that's what I'm going to do.